Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast, today is March 4th. 4th, right? Did I get it?
Bro, you was struggling too. Like I was a real. You was trying.
It was an old nigga struggle.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is my mama's birthday. Happy belated by the time you hear.
Wait, today or tomorrow?
Tomorrow, the 5th.
Oh, March 4th. Happy birthday, mom.
Yeah, happy birthday.
So we have a. I was gonna say special guest, but we got a cousin. our cousin came back on the show because we missed her. So we want to hear about her life and what's going on. The incomparable. Talented, artistic,
multi-hyphenate,
Reagan Gomez.
Hey now,
who people? Obviously, I watch your Twitter feed a lot, and people who people still are not realizing was in the TI video.
Yes.
And people still be like, that was you?
Well, you know, a lot of these people, you know, were they're children young. When that video came out. So, you know. I used to do a few videos back in my day.
You don't know your king days, Reagan?
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, I've been out there, you know.
You was a vixen. You was a video vixen back in the day.
Shit, I still am, okay?
okay. I don't want no smoke. You still lit?
That's right.
Go ahead, Nye.
Before we get too deep, that I'm bummed because Reagan is supposed to be in New York and she's not. We were both supposed to be part of Black Twitter Live 2-day event, starting with a quote unquote Black Twitter family dinner last night, which they canceled over the weekend because actually at the time I thought they were being extreme, but now it looks prudent because they were, you know, concerned about the coronavirus. And at the time that they canceled, we only had one confirmed case, but as of this morning, New York has 6 confirmed, 5 of which all come from the same person, but whatever. So I'm happy you were still able to get on with us, Reagan, but I was really hoping to be able to give you a big old hug last night, like in person.
I know. I was so excited. I was going to bring my 12-year-old with me. She hasn't been to New York since she was a baby. So I was going to take her out of school. It was going to be a nice little trip. And so we were bummed.
Have they given you on a rain date yet? Have they given you a
rain date? No. Because, you know, Corona is everywhere. Yeah. It's out here too. So, and people nasty. They're not washing their hands. So who knows if we even going to survive. So,
you know. We have to have a conversation about people needing to wash their hands is asinine. I cannot, like,
I'll be in a public bathroom and I will still see a motherfucker just walk on out.
I've seen the women's bathroom too.
You've seen it too, right?
I see it with regularity.
That's like what I'm
disturbing
saying.
Levels of regularity. And I'm not talking about the urine, bro.
Right.
Yeah, they come out the stall.
Exactly. Yes. And they just out.
Nigga, you're not even going to rinse that off, nigga. Like,
no shame. And they don't have no shame.
No shame. Going right back to the dinner table.
If I touch, like, dirty handles or public elevator buttons or if I'm in the bathroom, like, it's almost like I feel like I can feel the microwave.
But you're not even supposed to touch the door handle of the bathroom. I thought everybody knew that. You're not even, because people nasty.
And that's why I hate the air dryers.
I prefer
napkins.
Yeah.
Because that's literally how I exit the bathroom. I wash my hands, I take the napkin, swing the door about as much as I can, drop it in the trash, and then I keep pushing, slide out.
Did y'all see that that video of Bloomberg eating that pizza?
Ew.
And this man is running for president, and he is nasty. Look how nasty he is.
Licking his fingers and shit.
Oh, my God. Listen.
What is he doing, bro?
In fairness, I'm pretty sure Bloomberg hasn't shared a pizza with anyone in fucking 50 years, right?
Like, nigga. Just give him his own shit. That was crazy.
Y'all see the video of the guy in Whole Foods drinking out?
Oh, nigga, out the ladle.
That's
never
Get out the ladle, so, my nigga. And you putting that, oh my God, my nigga, what are you doing?
And nobody came up to him. Nobody said nothing.
That video, that particular video has been out for a little bit now, because I've seen that last season as well.
Okay.
And I think it was just kind of a reminder when you go and use these sorts of, you know, open air,
yeah,
you know,
the food buffet and all that.
Things like that. And I go to Whole Foods. I eat that
too. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, kind of bothered me. But, like, I mean, I would hope whomever was taping that, like close that pot off. Like, basically was like, look, man.
Yeah,
like,
yo, come take this whole shit out of here.
Take this out of here, because that's completely contaminated.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That was disgusting. So we were talking right before we started the tape that me and Naima got the corona. And we got the corona because we live in the same neighborhood. And there's a guy who he lived in New Rochelle, New York, which is in Westchester. But he has a son who I guess he goes to school at Yeshiva University. Did the teacher go to school there now? You know,
he's a student at
Yeshiva. Okay, yeah, Yeshiva, which is a big Jewish university, which is. Sorry, Nye, it's closer to you than to me, but yeah,
I think it's
equal. Point.
You is
it's crosstown.
It's crosstown for me. It's
uptown.
Like,
yeah,
up from me, and it's like four avenues over from you, or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But either way, it's in the neighborhood. So, I'm about to go to the supermarket after we finish taping and bunker down for the next 3 weeks.
This nigga
talking about hungry. That nigga go get some butter pecan ice cream,
some Pop Tarts,
and some Pop Tarts, and he can watch his stories and his having to have nots.
Or give me some Edmonds cake, and I'm good.
It is concerning. They cancel classes today.
Mm-hmm.
But this one guy who was only the second confirmed case in New York as of yesterday infected his son, infected his daughter who goes to high school in the Bronx. His wife and his neighbor who drove him to the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
So overnight, our confirmed cases jumped from 2 to 6 just off the strength of this one person. Then another friend of ours told me that the dude's daughter goes to the Y with her boss's son. I'm like, this dude is patient zero. Like,
yeah,
already the connection.
And he was taking a commuter train from New Rochelle to Grand Central Station, because he's a lawyer, apparently, and his office is very close to there. So he's been on that train as well.
His son has probably been on. There's a really crowded station for the one train because the hospital's right here.
Yep.
Right.
You know, so now I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere on the block.
Y'all ever seen that movie Outbreak from like 94,
yeah.
95?
Yeah,
and you remember that scene where that guy was sick and he went into the movie theater and he's coughing and people laughing at the movie? That's what this is.
Yeah, that's nasty. It's nasty. So y'all stay safe in that corona. Wash your hands. Wash your nasty ass hands.
Don't drink no corona beer either.
Oh, come on now. You're gonna stop the corona flow. I saw your man Trump today. I just saw CNN. He was talking about it's safe to fly. Come on, bro.
I hate him. So
I mean,
much.
He can't. God. I mean, he kind of gotta say that right now.
Right. Yeah, because he don't want the airlines to shut down.
Bro, bro, not just the airline. Once you start shutting down air commerce, dude, like you're talking about, like all that shit about getting your packages in 2 hours from Amazon. Done. Done with.
I was
working at FedEx when they grounded. After 9/11, like, dude, like 2 days of all of that shit building up and loading.
Oh yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Massive. It's massive backlogs. Yeah.
Wow.
So let's since I brought up Trump, we might as well jump into the Super Tuesday thing first. So Joe Biden, who was pretty much looking like he was dead in the water as recently as a week ago, and was kind of saving his you know, all his eggs in his basket, for lack of a better term, for South Carolina primary going into Super Tuesday, proved to be right. Peace to him and peace to Simone Sanders, who's his campaign manager, who did. I mean, not looking backwards, it was, I don't want to call it basic, but what they did was kind of what Democrats always have needed to do, which is lock in and shore up the black vote, and what and what Bernie Sanders
has never done.
Has never done
ever.
And I'm actually kind of not about dogging people or nothing like that, but I'm kind of shocked that Nina Turner, who's his campaign manager, wouldn't understand that. Like, it's like, you should know better. Like, they thought that the little Twitter people and the little Tumblr kids was going to be enough. It's like, no, you got to get Aunt Pearl and Uncle Elmer down in, you know, Mississippi, who are always going to vote. Those older black folks are going to vote. But no question.
Nina Turner, and I don't know since I know her as far as watching.
Yeah, we just know her from TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Nina strikes me as, I'm saying, she strikes me as one of those blacks, and we've talked about them on here quite a bit, who just want to go against the quote-unquote establishment for the sake of going against the quote-unquote establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, they don't feel like they need to invest in the older vote because, you know, because to them, that's the antithesis of being progressive. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, the older voting block is the most consistent voting block it always has.
Yeah, you can't stop the people from getting to the polls. They're right. Going.
And what really frustrated me last night as the returns were coming in is that I was seeing a lot of Biden supporters, like, being mad that the older demo turned up the vote. Like, oh, they're going to crush our dreams. It's like, no, y'all need to be mad at y'all for not turning up the vote. But that's the problem. The people who are voting for their future never really see the urgency of it. It's the people who are already in it who understand the urgency of it.
Exactly.
And it seemed to me, too, like, from their last campaign to now, they don't want to reach out to black voters. It's not that they don't understand. It's not that Nina Turner doesn't understand. They don't care about black voters. They think they can get enough of the Latino vote. They think they can get enough of young white kids.
Yeah, they think
that's going to be enough.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you can't tell me after his campaign failed last election that they didn't look into there's no way this is the second time this is happening and they're surprised by this. They don't want black support because they know black people do not fuck with them.
Exactly.
Well, I think Bernie's folks are really in like a heavy echo chamber because even with this whole this whole kind of grumbling they're having of like Warren should drop out and endorse Bernie, it's like there's a lot of arrogance in assuming that Warren supporters are going to convert their
Exactly.
Right.
Bernie supporters have spent an inordinate amount of time insulting Warren support, not just insulting Warren supporters.
And insulting Biden supporters and pretty much everybody else.
Everybody. And this is six years of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody wants to be in your club, bro. Like, I just, and I really think that they have been drinking Kool-Aid
They definitely have, and he hasn't grown his base at all since 2016.
Awesome.
Like, not literally not by one point. Like, it's exactly the same. I think it's a 25-26% percentile, and it hasn't grown one bit. And then my issue has been with his people is like, yo, I saw your man on 60. We talked about this last week. I saw your man on 60 Minutes. He said it was going to cost $30 trillion just to do the healthcare plan. At that point, he didn't even have an idea what any of the other shit was going to cost. Then they slipped out something this past week, and the total cost to do his healthcare plan, his free college thing, and all the other kind of things is like $50 trillion. It's like, yo, that's never happening. It's never passing. So, like, y'all are he's selling dreams out here. Like, if he was to get in, nothing he is says he's going to accomplish is going to happen. Because on top of all that, we talked about this on the show last week, too. He has no friends in the Senate.
Right.
They don't fuck with him. So
see why? He's insufferable.
Exactly.
My God damn. He's
exactly.
Horrible.
Exactly. So it ain't like he has a squad that's going to be like, yo, Bernie, we're going to get this done with you. It's a mess. So, I mean, it's still early. Still a lot more to go, but it's looking like Joe is more than likely, as of now, going to be the Democratic candidate. And that's the person that Trump seems to be nervous about.
Right, and that's why I don't understand that Sanders supporters also seem to think that Sanders has a better chance of beating Trump in the general than Biden does, which to me is...
It's the echo chamber.
It's the echo chamber.
Sidebar, did y'all see Simone Sanders grab that white lady last night?
I sure did.
This may be an unpopular opinion, But, you know, people are reposting it. Like,
it's not unpopular, Nye. I already know what you're about to say.
People, you know, black women save the day as usual. Or Simone don't play no games. I'm not celebrating that. Like, mm-mm. You have actual security there. Mm-hmm. Why does the black woman have to carry the crazy-ass white woman off to the side? Like, there's actual people whose job it is to do. There was a black man standing within arms. Like, why? There's security there. I'm not reposting and big upping. I mean, I guess Simone acted off instinct, and that's cool. But you're the comms manager. You're in security, like no.
And it's like when that white man walked up on Kamala at that corner that they had, and Karine Jean-Pierre had to get up and like be the barrier. And it's like you don't know who this man could have killed both of y'all.
Absolutely.
Like,
go ahead, bro. What was you gonna say?
She has definitely moved people in a former life. I've seen that. Listen, nigga, I worked at the tunnel and the Palladium, nigga. I've seen that technique. That by the waist mean I know how to move you, baby. Okay. She is definitely, this is not her first rodeo. And second of all, on a much more serious note, it is, it's really not her place, right? Like, as a person, you know, the obvious optics of black women coming to save the day aside, right. Just as a civilian, okay, this is not your job. You are not bonded as a security person. You are not under the insurance and under the the compensation in that capacity. Okay,
yeah, something happened.
So if something happens, so for God forbid, like she falls and this lady breaks her neck, right? Like, she's absolutely 100% exposed. Okay, this was not her lane. This was not an expectation for her to handle. Okay, and furthermore, like I've talked about before, there is excitement and then there are threats.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And as a security person, you're trained and you your experience allows you to be able to decipher which is which, okay? Mm-hmm. And that woman was an excited person and not necessarily a threat, okay? She was a threat to impede the progress of the show. She was not a threat to that person. So I think it's going to be – it's really important – for us to not necessarily, you know, sort of celebrate those sorts of things. It you know, it really does leave some level of exposure to her. I mean, listen, I wouldn't be surprised. Again, this is a white woman, so if a lawsuit comes because she says, you know, I broke my rib.
Yeah.
Or whatever the case might be.
I bruised my elbow or whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. And she's probably going to have some level of a claim.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so, you know, we're going to obviously we'll keep an eye on the whole politics thing. It's a long race, but it's starting to pick up some steam now.
This is also, and mind you, and let me just say, they need to be having a postmortem on where the security that's actually their job is positioned.
Yeah. What was your
woman has gotten to that?
They said that last night. Yeah, they said last night that Joe Biden needs Secret Service, so I guess he doesn't have it now. It's just regular security.
Joe definitely has Secret Service.
Oh, because he's a vice president. Where were they?
Yeah, but I think his detail is shortened, so he might only have one, maybe two people, if that. And so what happens is normally at a certain point, you're allowed to have, you know, additional agents that kind of come on board. You know, listen, with a lot of things, particularly with a security detail, there's a fine balance of being present and not being seen. And that can compromise people, particularly people who are avidly trying to be in the public, right? Like, you don't want to be seen with an army of bodyguards around you as you go say, right. Hey, vote for me. I'm your guy. You know, you want to seem like you've got it all under control. And listen, there are going to always be lapses because you don't get to plan ahead in these particular instances. You kind of show up to a rally. You got to do a quick walkthrough. You might have four or five people maybe under your direct supervision, and you kind of got to use those people ad hoc. You know what I'm saying? You might have to leave your senior person with the car running. You know, turn this around so we can get up out of here if we need to. Like, there's certain different protocols that take place. But I say all that to say, there should definitely be a conversation.
It's going to be a meeting.
Oh, there's definitely going to be a meeting.
For sure.
Yeah. It's going to be a meeting. Hey, so y'all see the Candyman trailer?
Yes.
Yeah.
What y'all think about it?
I think it was great. And I think there was just enough shade for me to want to zap Jordan up. But of course, everybody's talking about him once again flipping like a popular pop song and making.
Yeah. The Say My Name joint. Yeah, it looked hot though.
Really good update.
Yeah, it looked hot though. It looked super hot. But as it's actually, you know, you have to give props to what's her name, Nia DaCosta.
Yeah, Nia DaCosta.
She's the director. People think Jordan directed it.
Right.
He's producing it. And Nia DaCosta. Now, do you know her? Do you know her background? Reagan, do you know her work?
I don't. I follow her on Twitter. But she's a, you know, just a black woman director out here making it happen. So she is. So I'm excited to see it. I like the fact that because in the original Candyman, he was like, it was a long time ago, but he was like in love with the white woman. And
I'm
glad that storyline, it doesn't seem to be in this movie, and I'm happy about that. I'm glad that to see Tiana Paris. I love her a lot. I'm happy she's getting her shine. So, this looks good.
I do think, though, that we can expect, because Jordan is the co-writer along with Nina of the script, and I do believe Jordan just being Jordan, we can expect him to lean more in Candyman's origin story, which was that he was a free slave.
He was a slave, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Free slave who got rich, married a white woman, had a baby, and he was lynched for marrying a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that was with him and the white girl in Cabrini Dream, although he frames her for all the murder, so whatever. But I think that what we can see here is like the subtlety of the shade that I was talking about is like the only people in the trailer that we see actually looking at is white folks. Like from the very beginning, Dude tells like the legend. She's like, Who would do that? Happened full of white girls. You know what I mean? Like, it's just that's the only people that you see looking in a mirror doing this shit.
And even in that bathroom scene, when it looks like, I guess, a high school, when those girls started getting tore up, that black girl's in the stall looked like she don't get touched.
I doubt it.
Right.
Yeah.
The Candyman. And also with Cabrini Green being all the way gone now.
Yeah.
92, it was just about like the beginning of the gentrification of Cabrini Green, which is when the original came out. I fully expect Jordan to throw some undertones of like basically revenge for gentrification or something.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to see that. You know what? I'm going to jump in. I want to mention this other story because I know this is Nye's dying about this story. Let's mention this Public Enemy story.
Oh, Jesus!
And I'm broke up.
I need a broke up.
First the Fat Boys, now this shit.
You know what I
mean? Over Bernie Sanders.
Over Bernie. Who lost? I know Clay Face sitting there like, nigga, your man didn't even win, nigga. So.
Not 52 VH1 reality shows.
Right.
Bernie Sanders.
So, no, I mean.
In the same borough.
I think most of the people who listen to the show will probably know, but for those who don't, Public Enemy is a legendary rap group. Who were big in the 90s, the late 80s, I think was the first album, I think was 87, 88. And then they really kicked off in the top of the 90s through Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing.
And
a bunch of other stuff. So they're like, and they had a very militant stance on things.
One of the earliest social, maybe the earliest conscious rap group.
One of them, definitely in that mix. And so they have the kind of justification of Chuck D, who was the lead rapper, who has this big kind of preacher, booming voice, and always talked about things of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Megan Evers and Marcus Garvey and all these kind of black leaders of the past, juxtaposed with Flavor Flav, who was kind of almost like a, for lack of a better term, kind of like a court jester-ish kind of character. Mm-hmm. But if you listen, especially in the earlier stuff, if you listen, he actually was saying shit. But he wasn't saying it in a kind of a clownish way where you almost didn't kind of catch. He was actually saying some ill shit.
Spanish with a little extra something on it. Like, yeah. He's a hype man with a little bit of clownishness.
Yeah, with a clownishness. Yeah, so, you know, they've been around for 30-something years now. Signed the Def Jam. Rick Rubin signed them. They've made a ton of money, done a ton of things, and Flavor Flav obviously has gone on to become had become a big reality star, but they were still touring because you know they have a huge catalog and people want to hear them. So recently it came out that the Flavor Flav was excommunicated from the group because he wouldn't get on board with Chuck D, I guess, and other members of the group who wanted to full on support Bernie Sanders.
It's not that, as usual, you tell them the story wrong. So
that ain't what happened. That's what I had heard down to the down to the diner. I talked to Flav aunt. That's what she had told me.
So last week, at some point last week, this flyer went up, and it was like a silhouette of Bernie holding a mic up in the air, looking like he was doing a Black Power fist, but also holding in black and like PE colors, black and red. And it said, like, Public Enemy, Bernie Sanders, like, rock the mic. Some dumb shit. But basically, it was like if somebody decided they were going to public enemize a Bernie Sanders poster, right? And they were going to be performing together in L.A. So even I posted it. And, like, Chuck follows me. And I was like, we're respecting Chuck because I know you follow me. I was like, this made me roll my eyes so hard I got a headache. And apparently Flav, after that promo dropped, send a cease and desist because basically like I'm not on board with this. I'm part of Public Enemy. You can't use the name Public because Public Enemy has been performing without Flav as Public Enemy Radio.
Oh.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
So but in most people's minds, Public Enemy is just we know Professor like whatever, but for most people it really is Flav and Chuck, right?
Yeah, the two of them.
So you want to know this, whatever. It really is Flav and Chuck. So they've been performing without Flav as Public Enemy Radio. This was billed as Public Enemy. So Flav sent a cease and desist and was basically like, you can't use my name for this event. I'm not part of this event. I don't co-sign this event. So then on when was it? Was it Monday? Chuck releases a public statement. And that was the worst thing about this, that was all being played in the public. Chuck releases a public statement that Flav was fired from the group. And the last time Chuck released a statement that the group was disbanding was right before Do the Right Thing came out. So, like, this is a big deal. I mean, they've had their ups and downs, but the last time there was a public statement that Public Enemy was breaking up was before, in any form or way.
And that was because that was with the whole Griff.
Oh, wow.
The Griff stuff back then.
Griff was talking shit about, he was saying anti-Semitic things.
Yeah.
So Chuck just couldn't deal with the backlash. So basically, now you got this public fallout. But Chuck's thing was, we've been having problems with Flav. This has been a long time coming, which, all right, I won't doubt that because we all know Flav is Flav. But the timing of this dictates that this was the straw that broke the camel.
Yeah, the Bernie thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, if Flav don't want to be, if that's not Flav's candidate, he has a right to say.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I'm not with this. You know what I mean? So it's just, and then Flav comes at Chuck on Twitter, like, really, Chuck, man, you going to do this, man? And I could read it in his voice, like, you going to do this, man? You know, I'm not even on drugs no more, man. You know, I'm clean, man. I can't believe you said that, man.
And
like,
he said, you can't fire me. You can't fire me. Yeah, like, that's what he said.
It's really sad. And I'm like, this can't be how their chapter, like, this can't be how their chapter ends. Like,
yes. This is exactly how the chapter's going to end, because these are two 60-year-old niggas that are going at each other's throat and been mad at each other for years, and they have never hashed out their issues. And this is nothing. This is nothing but your uncle, the oldest uncle and the youngest uncle that ain't been speaking for the last 25 years. That's it. That's it. That's all this is. And the reality here is that this isn't, I don't think that this is necessarily a political stance for Flav. I think Flav, you know, he's never made his political
stance. Yeah, I think Flav would
be right.
But what Chuck is doing by, you know, kind of going at him, he's basically saying, and he said as much in his statement, Flav doesn't do benevolent performances.
Right, basically, he doesn't want to do anything for social good.
He doesn't want to do anything for social good, that they were invited by Harry Belafonte to do something for Sankofa, his organization. You know, Flav declined. Chuck, you know, basically said, you know, Flav would rather dance for his money, which was a clear shot at him.
Oh, yeah,
in a very sort of minstrel way. And You know, in fairness to Flav, I don't know Flav. I don't know his financial situation. But what I do know is that when people got to put food on the table, okay, free dates ain't really what's popping.
It ain't really working.
Right.
It's not really what's popping, okay? And the last time I checked, okay, Bernie wasn't missing no meals. So if can't nobody come up and find a duffel bag for me to for me to eat, like I get all of that. Like he's ultimately using his right. He's saying that there have been, his likeness has been used. There has been no accounting for that sort of stuff. And listen, do I think Chuck is robbing him blind? Probably not. I don't think Flav wrote a lot of that, you know, wrote a lot of material, if any at all, right? So his portions are probably very minimum.
Yeah, his publishing is light.
And he's probably got some young attorney who's selling him a dream of, you know, a big payday, and they haven't, you know, they've been jerking you around for years, and whatever the case may be, that happens. We've seen that story in the music business 1,000 times. But to see Chuck make these public statements and then say, you know, this TMZ behavior is beneath me as he releases a public statement.
On Twitter.
It's like, it's just the most, it's the most incredible thing to me. And really, I hold him the most accountable because he's the one who's the moral standard.
Yeah.
He's the one who's on the soapbox all the time. Right? So, come on, man.
And he should have known better. He should have known. He know how Flav roll. He knew Flav wouldn't be cool with this, so he should have known better.
I could have at least waited. Like, you couldn't have waited a week, 2 weeks before doing this with a whole, like, statement, announcement.
No, because
but Sean said them niggas been mad at each other for since 97.
And what is happening is that this dude is basically putting cease and desist out for something that Chuck feels like is his and his only.
Right.
Especially at this point in their lives, right? Like, Flav hasn't really been intricate or a part of that sort of inner circle. I'm sure Flav will pop up and they'll figure it out and they'll do so. It's Bobby Brown. Nigga, Brown.
New addition.
You do 5 or 6 shows out of the 15, out of the 15 dates and this shit.
Bobby couldn't make it tonight. He's sick.
He got his first half, nigga. Yeah, and he's gone, nigga.
Yeah, you know, he got
the child support payments off his back and the mortgage paid.
Bobby gonna do the LA date, but he ain't doing Louisville.
Yeah, he got 3 songs for St. Louis. Exactly. You know, we know how this goes, but it's really disappointing, and it's most disappointing to really watch Chuck behave in this way in public, particularly because he's 60.
But like you said, I'm not exaggerating here.
No, I want people to.
He might be more than 60. Yeah.
No. He's 60.
Okay.
Chuck and Flav are 60 years old.
Yeah.
Like Chuck was an old nigga in 88.
Yeah.
He definitely was. Because
Chuck started late. Chuck started when they started. Chuck was probably only in his mid-20s.
Chuck was in his mid-20s.
Yeah. He wasn't
Chuck
a teenager.
I think Chuck is born in like 1960, bro.
Yeah, Chuck definitely been around.
Yo, he remember the MLK assassination, dude. What are we talking about here?
I remember they took me out of school that day.
The Black Panther free lunch.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so yeah, but you can tell it's definitely built up animosity. By the way, say it again, Nye.
Flav and Chuck are the same age. They're both 60.
Yeah, so this is definitely built up animosity from a lot of years of.
Griff is also 60.
You know, so.
Everybody old.
Yeah, so I don't know. Peace to Public Enemy, man. They definitely my top 5, but look like that's over with, man. Wait, so before we move on, Reagan. So tell us what you've been doing, man. What's been up with acting, with the directing, with the writing, with the everything. We want to hear your creative.
Are you in the new Proud Family reboot?
No. I'm not in that. I wasn't in the original. No. I need to get. I definitely need another.
I thought you were on the voices in the Proud Family. I'm not sure why I thought that.
No. My first cartoon wasn't until the Cleveland Show. It wasn't until 2000. So yeah. So I'm still kind of new in the voiceover game. But so what I have coming up, I talked about it a little bit the last time I was on the show. the first feature film that I'm going to be doing. I'm actually going to be launching a Kickstarter within the next month or two. So,
okay,
you know, I hope you guys, you know, send me a few coins.
But we'll call them together.
Yes. But it's actually going to be a short film. We've been trying to get this money for this feature film forever. Y'all know this behind the scenes shit. It takes forever. And I actually wasn't going to do another Kickstarter, but a friend of mine, Matthew Cherry, it happened
Nigga won an Oscar.
For real. Well, even before that, when he launched his Kickstarter for Hair Love, 2 years ago, by that time, I had already done 3 crowdfunders. And I don't know if y'all know, but that shit is hard.
Yes, yeah, I could imagine.
So difficult. The first time I ever did a Kickstarter was in 2011, 2012. Folks swore that I was scamming people. They was like, you ain't been on TV in forever. She's trying to scam you out your money. So that was the first time. So I've done it 2 times since then. And we've had successful campaigns and we've done the web series and all that kind of stuff. But after that, the third one, I was like, I'm not doing this shit no more. It's hard. It's just me. I don't have no fucking assistant. My kids still got homework and shit. I got to cook dinner and I don't have time for this shit.
Life is real.
But when Matthew did his Kickstarter and he went double, triple, quadruple the amount that he was looking for, I DM'd him oh my God, you inspired me to do another one. So that's what I'm about to do. I talked about it before, but it's about a black girl who lives in LA, who finds out her dead parents were superheroes and now the fate of the world is up to her. It's about her and her black and Mexican homegirls. They're in middle school on bikes, saving the world. Wow. I'm so excited. We're about to launch this shit. It's going to be a short film. It will eventually be a full length feature. That's what I'm doing I'm going to be 40 in April. That is what this chapter and, you know, going into my 40s, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be writing and directing. And that's what I'm excited about. You know, I talked about it last time I was here too, but the acting will always be there. But this is the shit I'm telling you. This is the shit that I'm passionate about, that I want to do. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's what I'm doing. And to do that, I've been having to, not that I'm getting just offers out the ass, but I'm not getting on the freeway to drive again to audition for some whack ass show that I don't like. I'm not 22 no more. Yeah. I'm not 22 no more. So this is what I'm doing. And, you know, it takes time, it takes money, it takes energy. And in order to make sure that the content that I create is up to the level that I like, you know, I can't be doing TV shows here and there and everywhere. This is where I'm focusing my energy. So that's what I have going on right now.
Okay, well, no, y'all take food stamps. I got the.
No, I do not.
Okay, I'll see.
Nah, definitely send that link, man. We're going to get the kid. The kid's going to crack open their piggy bank and
exactly.
Put a little something on it.
Cousin Reagan need these $63 now.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm excited. And you know what? I think this is a good time. Like we just talked about Nia DaCosta. It's a good time not only for black content creators, but for black women.
Yes.
Black women directors. We're out here. We're out here, and it's hard, but we making this shit happen.
Are you allowed to give us? Is there any Queen Sugar update? Are you allowed to even talk about that? Are you gonna?
Well, you know, I don't know. They call me and ask me if I'm available, and I'd be like, yes. So they just got picked up for I think season 5.
Yeah. Yes. It'll be about 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But honestly, obviously, if they had me back, that would be great. But honestly, my character, I did one episode last season, but
we're not together.
Yeah, we're not together, so I never know. I never know.
Yeah, how they're gonna write it? Maybe swing you back around or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got you on the Kickstarter because we want to be able to yell and scream like everybody else did when Matthew won his Oscar this year.
Man, yeah,
man. That was dope.
Black Twitter's Oscar. I mean, it was Matthew.
For sure. Because he was on the Twitter. I mean, I don't know if he's still on as much now, but he was on all the time before.
But
I just imagine
he's busy. He's probably super busy now. He's busy.
There's a new Saved by the Bell series that he's directing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, is he? Is, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Because yeah. I saw they didn't they didn't ask Lark to come back.
I mean, what was that about?
I guess because, go ahead, bro.
You know, I think we kind of know that Lark has dealt with some issues in the past.
Mental health and stuff.
So, I don't necessarily, I think that it's really tricky to ask someone in that position, right? Like, because it, you know, kind of teeters on, can they do it?
Yeah.
Will this come off as exploitive, knowing that they're in this sort of situation? So, listen, I think they definitely should have handled it at least with her reps and done something to just acknowledge, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Not the character.
Her presence. Yes.
Yeah, because the character was a huge part of the show.
Yes, there's definitely something there, but you know, that happens.
They're gonna be like Lisa Turtle, she live in Zimbabwe right now. She just make it back. Okay, so wait, do y'all watch Real Housewives of Atlanta this week?
I did not know, but I saw the timeline going crazy. Was it Kenya again?
Kenya? Yeah, it was Kenya and Mark. So I'll get a backstory. Now will interrupt me if I'm telling it wrong. So the gist of it was Mark threw a charity event for I forget the name of the foundation to help black men mentor black boys. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the foundation.
Black Men Lab.
Yeah, Backman Lab, exactly, based in Atlanta, and it start. You know, basically, so the most of the episode is about the kind of build up to the to them all going to the event. You know, who are you going to wear and da 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 da. So right away, Mark is in. They show the first scene is Mark and with the baby, and Kenya comes in, and she's kind of she's bought a suit for him, she's bought a tie, she's bought this whole thing for him, and he just starts immediately like, what's that? I don't like that tie. I don't know. Meanwhile, this thing is sitting on the couch. She's been running around all day, and you also come to find out that she really put the event together because you don't live in Atlanta.
Oh wow!
So all the contacts were hers. Like her getting people to come and getting the venue together, people to do the event planning. Like she was really involved with putting it together.
But Jeff, the organization itself, I'm sure, did something.
Yeah. But they showed her like making phone calls and
But she was acting on his behalf for his portion of what he was supposed to contribute.
Yeah, because he's not in Atlanta, so. It just starts off messy, and then they go to the event, and it's, you know, the bottom line is they have the event. He's being an asshole. He doesn't acknowledge her. He doesn't tell her thank you when he does his little speech. He gets nasty with the production crew. He's, like, he's barking at her because she wants to get up, because she's the hostess. She wants to get up, you know, and move around and shake hands and kiss babies, and he's like, sir, where you going? Why are you leaving me? Like Russ says, it's just a very uncomfortable thing to watch. It's not even entertaining because he's so nasty to her, and it's funny because you know Kenya is obviously can be very nasty too. Mm-hmm. So because of that, and it's done, you know, some awful things to people on the show. Mm-hmm. It has to be acknowledged. So I think that because of that a lot of people have a hard time being sympathetic to her being verbally and emotionally abused on television, because she kind of had the karma coming. It's like, and I separate them. Like, yes, she's done some awful, awful things to people as recently as like, you know, a couple episodes ago with Tanya. It's awful.
Yeah.
But it's just like the way dude treats her is just, I mean, y'all go ahead and take over from
there. Well, I find it interesting that her castmates don't. Like, her castmates definitely notice the difference in her behavior around Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't see it enough, but they think it's submissive, or they think it's Kenya trying to hide her true self. Like, none of them are really picking up on, like, Mark's needs. Like, Mark's acting.
Yeah.
You know, and Nene is the one who comes closest, because she's like, I've never seen them be, like, lovey-dovey or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think Kenya was really hoping that this event, because it was their first kind of big event together, could be an opportunity for them to really like do, because you know, I'm sure she wants to be couples goals and you know,
They're working together on the event.
Yeah. And I mean, Mark's Mike caught so much bullshit, like,
oh wow,
consistently just trying to like,
and you know, I don't mean to cut you somebody, off, like, yo, rescue, I don't mean people, to cut you like, off. That's what they allowed in the show.
Yeah, we don't even know
it on that hot mic.
That's real.
my God, I could only imagine what's on the editing room floor when right. that mic was hot. Because I'm sure once they connected him, he's on and running.
Yeah, some people, he was like, yo, I need to get away from my wife, like, rescue me from my wife. And then somebody else was like, well, how are you liking being married? He's like, I hate it. Everybody knows that. And then at one point, you hear him saying that something's intrusive. And then he starts yelling at production, like, if I come in like that, that's enough. You guys have gotten enough. If I come back down here one more time and you guys are still filming, it's going to be a problem. Like, I don't give a fuck. You know, and it's like, you know, get those characters, turn them off. It's time, like, you got enough. So when the episode was over, Bravo puts up a end card that, or Chiron, that the next day was when Mark and Kenya announced their separation.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Mark posted, because he doesn't have socials personally. So this is the thing about Mark. Mark is one of them dudes, I feel like, who all his shady behavior he does behind the guise of, I don't want people in my business. Like, he doesn't
I want my shit mm-hmm. private. Yeah,
he's the reason that Kenya, like, you know, Kenya got in trouble with Bravo because she didn't let them know she was getting married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She sent her pregnancy off the show with the exception of a cameo. So I think that part of me thinks that Mark acts like a dick on camera because he's so resentful of having to be on camera in the first place, right?
Mm.
And that might be because he knows he can only control his image so much. But I think that's part of the reason why he's just so nasty. But he releases on his restaurant's Instagram page a picture of all the men from the event. This might have been the night of the show, maybe before the show. A picture of all the men from the event, and apologizes to the organization. Like, yeah. I really wanted to support this organization, and I'm all about positivity with Black people. I'm talking about, I let my personal stuff get in the way of I let what was going on with me personally get in the way of the event or something, which kind of makes it sound like him and Kenya had a back and forth. Him and Kenya were not having a back and forth. He was being a dick.
And Kenya always says, like, she tried whenever Mark goes into this mode, she just says, I hate to argue with him, so I don't say anything. So if they don't do the back and forth thing publicly, because she knows that she says one thing, it's gonna set off. So she always kind of swallows it, you know, like, all right, Mark, okay.
I listened to y'all's episode. I actually listen to y'all all the time. So last week I think y'all talked about this, and I have seen episodes of the new season, and he does come off very nasty. But Jeff, you're right. It's like, because Kenya can be equally as nasty, but we in this dynamic we see him being nastier to her, and obviously man and a woman, so we're obviously thinking, like, I hope she's okay, like, are these mm-hmm. just words, like, mm-hmm. where is this coming from? And it, and people are so, they're less sympathetic to her. It makes me think back to, y'all remember when they were in, like, Mexico, and that she was telling that guy, you're making me uncomfortable, you need to leave, and he, like, tried to, folks were blaming Kenya for that, too. And I'm man was trying to, like, choke her or something.
Yeah, he kicked her. He kicked her doors. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So people definitely, they're not sympathetic toward her. It makes me wonder, like, how did they even get together? Like,
when was the good times? Because they ain't been together that long this bad.
And this dude is not young, so he been nasty for a while. Yeah. That's who he is. So I wonder, how did y'all even get together? Like, what is this?
I feel horrible that, like, their daughter is seen as, I mean, she's a baby, but he's, like, he's not even sweet to her in front of the baby, right?
Like, yeah, even in front of the baby, he'll say, like, real slick shit. But
This baby's going to see these episodes.
Absolutely.
Like,
you know, absolutely.
Well, and I did tell some people today, some people on Twitter, because they were like, he's just giving Kenya back how she acts. I'm like, but she doesn't act that way towards him. Like,
exactly.
And that's not how your husband, this is her husband. What the hell? People don't know what the hell they're talking about. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Your husband ain't supposed to be be treating you shitty because you was nasty to Nene. Like, what the fuck you talking about?
Right.
That's retarded. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Not even saying, like, you know, I don't like it when you do X, Y, Z. He's just zip it.
He's like, I don't like you. I don't even like you. I don't like nothing you say. Yeah. I don't like nothing you do. I don't like the kind of, I don't like shit about you. That's awful.
She even begs him like you know, for intimacy. Like, I think
right. Yeah, that's show. Awful.
She was like, oh yeah, you know, we got a sitter, so we got a sitter, so we can, you know, kind of have some, you know, sexy time. And he's just like, ugh.
Right. And then she started doing the caveman, and like that whole exchange was so awful. Yeah. Because
what are
laughing, but like it was dead serious.
What do the other women like?
Well,
say
no,
to
that
her
was, I was
about
say that.
This.
That was interesting. And I just totally randomly, I was messing around on YouTube last night, and I guess the Real Housewives Bravo does a after show thing.
Oh, yeah.
I had never seen before. So I watched the one from this episode last night. So it's just like they're in a studio. And they'll interview like them in pairs. So it was like Cynthia and Eva, and then Candy and Candy and Kenya, and this like this producer, and he just asked them questions. And so they asked her about this episode, and you know, Candy was kind of being quiet, but you know, Kenya kind of was keeping it chill. She was like, yeah, like that night after that event, like it was lit. Cause I was tired of him treating me like that, and I was mad that he didn't acknowledge me, and he doesn't, you know, listen, and he treats me terribly. Like, she kind of like kept it real, and then they cut to Cynthia and Eva. They were talking, and Cynthia was like, "Yo, he's an asshole."
Yeah.
Like they're like, "Yo, he's a fucking asshole." Like, I don't like the way he treats Kenya. And also, they seem to now starting to acknowledge that this dude is terrible.
I just didn't see enough of him.
Yeah, it could be because he don't live down there.
He didn't live down there, and he didn't do a lot. But I think we've only seen him do one other couple event, actually.
Yeah.
And you know, Kenya would talk about complications in terms of like the distance, and that. But she never, and she kind of, I think maybe with Candy and maybe with what's his name, Cynthia, has led on about her and Mark communicating different, you know, Mark being different arguments and stuff, but like nothing to the extent that we've even seen on camera, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Like,
it's just, I've been married for 20 years, and it's one thing to get married at 18 and 19 and you don't know shit about shit. You don't know how to communicate. That's one thing. But to be over 40 and you just got married to this dude, like,
yeah.
This is what you're doing at 40 plus? This is how you want to spend your time and your energy. Yes, you have a gorgeous
Kenya's actually 40. I didn't realize this. Kenya's actually 49.
I thought
come
you
on, were. Man. Come
yeah,
on.
I thought she was a little younger. So she's, you about to say she's 50. Going
come on now.
Yeah. Mm-mm. What you got to say? What you got to say, bro, before we check out?
I mean, it's pretty much the same sentiments that you all have had. I mean, as a husband, watching that is just it's really uncomfortable and unbearable. He just also seems like an ass, like outside of what we see with his wife, he looks like a very unfun guy to hang around.
Even with the boys, he'd be like the nigga, he'd be like, damn,
who man is this? Yes, he's you know who he is? He's the nigga complaining at the steakhouse the whole dinner. Oh, they don't have this. And you know, nigga, just get the Johnny Walker Black nigga and shut up.
And being mad rude to the staff.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. See, I think that sort of behavior is always indicative of people who behave that way in work as well, particularly because he's a boss. And I think that in the beginning, that might have been a bit of a turn on for her, right? Like this really take charge sort of man. And, you know, he's very different from the other guy. And you quickly realize that you're going to be treated no different. Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to get those tongue lashings as well. You're going to be held to that level of, to scrutiny, and it was just, and also too, I'm gonna just add before I jump off of this, I don't think she bought him that suit. Now, I've bought suits off racks,
okay,
and it don't be that tailored. It be a little tailored, it don't be that tailored, nigga. You gotta go. They got to measure you to have that hug in your back like that.
So, what you think? So she just picked it up from the cleaners?
I think that was a suit that he already had, which is That's a fairly common suit for a man. A cream color, white colored linen. That's basic, not basic, but that's common. And you kind of do your accessories. And he was bitching about a tie. And I'm like, nigga, this is like kind of a part of being married. Like, I have an assortment of ties and shit that I actually might wear one time because I'm trying to coordinate with what my wife is wearing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really not that deep. Like,
it's yeah, he was, oh, yeah, that's the other part, Reagan. He was complaining, like, she had this, I guess, I don't know, this, maybe like a, I don't the color is, it's like a tan, not tan, but it's like a, in the brown, kind of light brownish family dress. It's a really pretty dress. Had things like little glass things on and whatever. So she got a tie to cut the tie, which would match the color of her dress. And he's just like, why we got to match? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, like, he's just like, what you do? I don't like that. And then she's like, after all that, she's like, all right, let me go get dressed. And he's like, where you going? You going to get dressed before me? He was like, she was like, yeah, I have to do makeup and hair and stuff, dude. That takes me a minute. He's like, oh, okay, big boss, go get dressed before me. I'm like,
what? Oh, my God. Oh, no.
It's very sassy.
And annoying. Yeah. Annoying. Like, you, yeah. I mean, God damn.
Yeah, awful. Just awful. He's an awful nigga. He's an awful nigga, for lack of a better term.
He consensus.
Just, he's an awful nigga. I wanted to also just give – wait, it was another TV show or something I wanted to give a shout-out to. One second. I lost my place. Hold on, y'all. Daggone it.
Well, while you're looking for
it – yeah, y'all keep talking.
I need to give a shout-out to Love is Blind because – Reagan, have you been
watching? Yeah, I got to watch that.
No, but everybody on my timeline, I haven't had the time. No, I have not seen it. That's the one with the white guy and the black girl?
Yeah. So, okay. I think I talked about it last week. I believe I talked
about it. Yeah, you mentioned it. You mentioned it last week.
From Netflix where you don't meet the person until after you've proposed to them in person. Mm-hmm. So, the finale aired last Thursday, which was all the weddings. Because the way they do it is everybody shows up on the wedding day. Everybody shows up to the altar. And you don't let this other person know if you're going to move forward or not, literally until you're asked whether, until you get the, will you take part, right?
Right, so, right.
You know, there was some drama, there was only like one kind of real surprise, but the big thing is that tonight at midnight/tomorrow drops the reunion episode, which is what everybody's been waiting for, because there are two candidates, characters, cast members, whatever you want to call them, especially who are wilding out on the show and who have been wilding out since the show. Well, one has been. One is the guy Carlton, who was bisexual but hid it from, and like he himself was calling it a secret. He himself was calling it something that he was hiding, hiding it from the woman that he proposed to until they got on the honeymoon, and then literally didn't want to give her any time to process it. And she just had questions, and he was called.
Oh, that's why the timeline was talking about that. Okay,
he flipped out and called her biphobic when really she was just trying to
figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, like she was really tripping. Her thing was kind of like, you know, I feel like you lied to me by omission, and she still was being like very calm. And he's just like, "Fuck that, fuck this, your wig crooked, this that bitch, this through the ring," you know, like it was all crazy. Well, by the way, he is Cynthia Bailey's assistant, but that's a whole nother, whatever.
So, oh, word? Okay.
Oh, wow.
The internet didn't realize that till after the fact. Because when he's been on RHOA, he was clean shaven and he has a beard now. Then there's this chick who got married to one guy. But like right before they got engaged, she kind of put him on hold because she was falling for this other guy. The other guy told her she wasn't the one. She had like a full breakdown. This guy Barnett, she accepted the other guy's proposal, Mark, who is 10 years younger than her, and then proceeded. So then what happens is when all the couples leave the pods, they're always together. They go on the pre-moon together, and then they all live in the same complex until they get married. So I don't think anybody realized that you were going to have to be around these people that you were, because they all came from the same dating pool. So I don't think they realized you're going to have to be around these people you rejected, you didn't choose.
It was awkward.
Yeah, so every time she would be around dude who she was into, she was like being really embarrassing, like half throwing herself at him, half trying to undermine like his relationship, all this other stuff. So we all know that they're gonna get in her ass about that. That's what everybody's ready for.
So this is Netflix, right?
Yeah, this is Netflix. So the reunion. So this is one of the shows that Netflix has been parceling out
week by week.
Well, yeah, but in groupings, right? So they did it with the circle. Like 3 or 4 episodes 1 week, 3 or 4 episodes another week.
Okay.
The finale, and now the reunion special.
All right, cool. I want to watch it because I see a lot of people talking about it.
It's
Other thing I wanted to mention real quick is just the man Chris Matthews catching that.
Oh my God! I watched it live. I was.
I didn't see it live. Were you bugging out?
I watched
it a long time ago, but yeah.
I watched it live because I watched Ari Melbert, then I watched Chris Matthews.
Yeah, I fuck with Ari.
It's Chris Hayes. And I don't even fuck with Chris Matthews like that. Like, he's always saying weird shit, yeah, off shit. Obnoxious. I was watching one time and Kamala Harris was on.
Oh, the Kamala interview was crazy. Like,
virgin. And I was like, what the fuck? It's always a what the fuck is Chris Matthews.
Even last week when he interviewed Elizabeth Warren with the whole thing with Mike Bloomberg, he was looking at her like, why you think the woman's not lying? And Elizabeth was like, why would I think she is lying? Like,
he's been out of touch for about 15, 20 years now. Yeah. Like, he is so out of touch. But yeah, he had just came on. He said, you know, he went into, you know, I need to make a statement, and I've loved talking to you guys, and I'm going to miss you guys. And I had a meeting with NBC, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck is this? And we decided that, you know, I'm resigning. And it was literally like 2.5 minutes. They cut to commercial. When they came back to commercial, Steve Kornacki was sitting in the seat.
Visibly shocked,
almost looking like he was gonna cry, like he didn't know what the fuck was going on.
He was really stressed out. Yeah.
Yes, and then they immediately cut to commercial again. And when they came back, no more Chris Matthews. He was gone.
Out.
So we gone. Something was coming because after that, you're right. Chris has been wilding, and I swear I feel like he's been sundowning. Like when he was doing election coverage for 2016. I was like, they need to stop letting Chris be on TV so late at night. Like, and sometimes it would be funny but uncomfortable, like when he had Michael Che on. And like when I met Michael Che months after that, and the first thing I said to him was like, dude, I'm so sorry. He was like, yo, the Chris Matthews thing. I was like, yo. And this was like 6 months later. Like, that's how crazy it was.
What happened with that?
So Michael Che and the white boy he does.
Colin Jost.
I know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What the DNC in Philly? Well, what was it? Was it DNC in Philly?
It was DNC in Philly.
Uh-huh. So Chris had them on one night after like convention coverage or whatever, and Chris just kept laughing. Like, they weren't even telling jokes. Chris was just laughing, and then he's like, "Who's the funniest black guy?" And he was just like the most awkward shit. And even but it's so funny because Che wasn't even, you could tell Che and Colin were both like, we're going to humor your ass, but this is weird. We're being completely kind of just like straight and dry, but Chris was giggling like a little kid. And it was like he had never been around a young black man before. It was the same.
Oh my gosh.
It was almost like he was like, tell a joke. You know, like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, but then there's the more embarrassing things, like when he would have women on, as soon as they start to answer,
talk right over them.
He was famous for that. Famous for it.
So after the Warren interview that Jeff just mentioned, there was some backlash, and this writer came out. I want to say she was with Slate. Was saying that, you know, Chris had made her uncomfortable in the past.
Yep.
The more people came out, said apparently there have been some settlements about the same type of shit. So he was taken off of primary coverage. In South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I think we all kind of knew that something was coming, but it was still surprising that there was no announcement. It just kind of happened in real time. But I mean, and honestly, his goodbye speech was like, that's actually the Chris Matthews I fuck with. It was much more even killed, and it was much more than I expected.
Yeah.
To go out grumpy old manish, which I guess he did if he just broke out, but still, the actual goodbye itself, I thought was a very, like, he left at least with a good note in terms of, like, his parting words, even if he left everybody in the lurch in terms of.
And he'd be all right. He'd be good. I'm sure he got a massive golden parachute.
He'll probably
write in a book or something like that. He'll be fine.
He has a podcast, too.
I'm very curious who they give that slot to.
I know. I hope it's a black woman or a woman of color.
I hope it's Joy.
It could be Joy.
I hope so too. So then that means they would have to give the weekend to another black woman because you can't just have one and move her around. We need more than one.
I saw who else is available over there? Tiffany Cross.
Oh yeah, Tiffany, Maya Wiley,
Corrine, Pierre. But we'll see what they do. But I just want to mention that because that shit was just such a bizarre.
Yeah.
A bizarre moment on TV. Bro, you want to take the Spike Lee thing?
I mean, I can. It's not really that much. Spike Lee, long time Brooklynite. Peace to my man Spike Lee. And clearly Morehouse alum. Spike Lee was, I don't want to say accosted, but had a very heated exchange at the Garden. Regarding using an employee entrance. So the Knicks have had, in recent histories, have been really, really terrible at PR.
Yeah.
And
Dolan has been wild.
And like really, really. And so Dolan has done this to fans. Like Dolan has actually banned certain fans from not coming into the Garden. Mm-hmm. Like you can't enter at all.
Mm-hmm.
He got Oakley up out of there. Security mm-hmm. had this heated exchange with Spike Lee, who is, for all intents and purposes, like the face of the Knicks, right? Like that's who you associate with the Knicks. It's like Bernard King, Patrick Ewing, Spike.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So this is really about So Spike has been using an employee entrance for years. And for those that don't know, while it doesn't sound like a very long way away, it's on a cold New York City night. Yeah. These blocks are really massive.
Yeah.
So Spike was taking an entrance, which was on the 33rd Street side. The 31st Street side. And they said, hey, man, you have to take the entrance on the 33rd Street side. So he basically stood on the elevator and he said my ticket was scanned already.
Yeah.
And that he was on the elevator with other patrons that apparently used that elevator.
Yeah.
And eventually the elevator operator says, okay, well, I just can't just stay here with them. He took them up to, I think, the fifth floor, which is where the actual level of the Garden is. Mm. And that's when he was greeted by security. That told him, hey, you know, can we speak to you over here? And da 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 da. And then Spike went a little ape shit.
Yeah.
which is, listen, man, when you run a business, and I have run a business before, there's certain people that get certain privileges, and you understand that.
You would think.
And if Spike Lee can't fucking take whatever entrance is most convenient for him.
And he's been taken for 20 years.
In fairness, I want to just also explain. In fairness, as a person who's run a business, that is not. You can't do that, right? Like you legally and insurance-wise, it is not good for you to have patrons using employee entrances. Again, if something happens, this is not a workers' comp situation because. How the environment that we provide for our employees are not always the environments that we provide for our patrons.
Of course not.
Right.
So I understand that point of view. And apparently there was like an email sent out, but who the fuck is reading a mass email from
Garden
in March? My nigga. It was like the beginning of the season. And the long and the short of it is, and what I said was that this is really indicative of organizations that are terrible from top down.
Yeah.
What that really showed me was that there was no employee that came into contact with Spike felt that they had the ability to use their judgment in this capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Elevator man stops him. Ticket man scans him. You've already got mixed messages.
These people that basically know him because he's there.
Of course they know him.
Right.
Years.
So, kids. Nobody is there and able to use their judgment. The security guards weren't there and able to use their judgment. Or maybe they were, right? Maybe their judgment was just this poor. Yeah. But my point is like this shouldn't even reach the level of an owner. Like this is a easy building management situation.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And I think had it been relayed to Spike in that way, that he would have probably said, "Oh, you know, I'm in already. Next time I got
next
you.
Next time I know which way to
you
go.
Know, exactly. No problem, Mr. Lee. Shake his hand. This is not a thing." Now, I do want to say, Spike's my man. So I'm prefacing this.
But
Spike was acting like, you know,
he was on the bridge.
You wasn't on the bridge
like
on Bloody
you
Sunday.
Did my brother. Arrest me like you did my brother.
Yeah, like let's, you know, Spike, relax, my nigga. Like it's not that deep. Nobody pulled out a billy club on you.
Exactly.
Nobody was putting handcuffs on you.
Nobody maced you with some old
dumb shit. He was going a little martyrish on us.
Yeah,
on,
he definitely
on that
was. You're going to arrest me like you did my boy Oakley.
Yeah. Now, listen. I don't know, but it sounded to me when he said that. I said, Spike might have had a little taste. He might have had a little get warm.
Might have been a little warmed up.
Yeah, that's just normal.
That's
just normal everyday Spike energy, though.
But
to your point, Sean, about the PR problem with the Knicks, the statement that they put out after, I was like, who the fuck wrote this shit?
Well, I thought that was also interesting.
If Spike wants to take, you know, him using the VIP, which we've told him so many times that he can't do, like the tone was so.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you my theory.
I was like, who wrote this shit?
I'm going to tell you my theory. Well, first of all, Steve Stout just said he was part of brand management.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have heard from him.
Yeah, in his capacity. I did want to hear from him. I really did.
Versus him telling us about the coach, right? My theory is that Spike is connected in a way to the New York Knicks that they cannot shake. And I think they want to shake that. Mm. I think Spike as an older man does not resonate with young players in the way that Drake does for Toronto, or how Wayne did for Miami when they were doing that run
exactly.
And Khaled and all of those guys.
Yeah.
So I think that because Spike comes off as this sort of ornery, sort of cantankerous, old man,
mm-hmm.
and I think that there's no shortage of people who can either afford or willing to spend the bread that Spike spends on those seats. Mm-hmm. They will, them seats, there's a list. I assure you.
Oh, yeah.
There's a list.
They can't wait for Spike to get the fuck out of there.
There's a list as long as my arm that will be double whatever Spike is paying. So that's not the concern. I do think that they are doing a very classic New York thing, which is what landlords and tenants do, right? Which is, I'm going to make this very uncomfortable.
I'm going to make it very difficult.
I want you to not feel welcomed here.
Yeah.
I want this to become, yes. And I think that they're trying to rebrand, and that's a part of the rebranding, right? Like, obviously, they can't tell him you can't buy the season tickets. I mean, he's literally had season tickets for as long as any of us can remember.
Yeah. So we're going to take away a few of these privileges because of the change of the guard.
Changing the guard.
So you can't go through this door, Spike, or no, you know, that the popcorn, we don't make that popcorn no more.
Exactly.
But the Knicks is a legacy organization. Like, I'm trying to imagine the Lakers doing this to fucking
Jack.
They would never.
Here's the other thing. And I said this to Reagan on Twitter, which is the Lakers is still, relatively speaking here, they're a mom and pop organization.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that the Garden is MSG. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the Garden is not just the Knicks. It's the Knicks. It's the Rangers. It's the physical building. It's Radio City Music Hall. It is a massive, massive operation. Whereas, you know, the people that deal with Jack and deal with the Lakers and deal with this is their special. Celebrity is their specialty.
Yeah. And they're people that call them personally. Yes. Right.
Money doesn't necessarily, again, it's like in LA, there's no shortage of people who can afford those seats. It's about mm-hmm. whether or not you can get the access to those seats.
Yeah.
Well, in New York, it's long bread too. And you don't have to necessarily, like, so they don't necessarily deal with the kind of celebrity, in my opinion, and they don't have the, New York doesn't have the culture of
taking care of the celebrities
and them, in the same way that, like, I've been, like I was saying, I was at the Garden one night at a concert, and A-Rod was there. This is A-Rod, nigga. Like, first of all, for those that don't know, because you probably see him sitting down, A-Rod's a big guy.
He's big as shit.
He's like 6'3". Like, he stands out in the crowd. Mm-hmm. He's very noticeable. And he's a handsome dude, right? So he's a fucking very noticeable guy. And you can tell he was not really, like, trying to go past anyone as much as he was just looking for a reprieve from the crowd. He didn't kind of want to be the center of attention at that point. Yeah. And the guard was, like, really legitimately stopping A-Rod.
It's like, nigga, let this man.
Like, nigga, everybody back there looked at each other. Was like, is he really stopping A-Rod? Like, right now? Like, let this nigga through. Like, dude, we were like, dude, that's A-Rod. That's Alex Rodriguez. He plays third base for the Yankees, right?
Exactly. Like,
you know, and then.
I think what happened with the Lakers, though, to your point, Sean, that they actually, and this is going to sound a little harsh, but they actually kind of got lucky because Jack, in the past few years, he's gotten sick. So he doesn't come to the games anymore. So they kind of dodged that bullet just because Jack just doesn't show up anymore. So they don't have that issue of kind of trying to, like, rebranding a little younger. You know,
they didn't need to because
Jack don't come. So now Mark Wahlberg comes.
But the thing is, even if Jack was coming, they wouldn't have looked.
Oh, they would never treat him bad.
Never.
But I think I think to me, again, that is indicative of an organization that doesn't really get seeing him as an asset. And
they want to get him out of here and get more rap niggas in there.
Like, you know, look, man, God bless, okay, but, you know, Spike is as a part of that front row as anybody has ever been in the NBA. Period.
Yeah.
So it's he said he's not going to go to any more games this season.
Which
is not much because they
say this nigga being a martyr. Like, first of all, there's 12 games left in the year,
and the nigga stink. So
and eight of them is on the road, niggas.
Exactly,
you're missing 4 games. Relax.
Exactly. But the trip thing was that night. They played the Houston Rockets
and they won,
and like the crowd was on their feet. It came down to the wire. It was actually a great win, and then this shit starts up. So. I don't know. Let's end the show talking about what we've been talking about on our what's it called? Group chat. Megan Thee Stallion. So, Megan Thee Stallion is an artist based in Houston, Texas. Female rapper. She's been around probably 3 to 4 years, you know, from her kind of start to now.
Mm-hmm.
She signed to 1501 Entertainment, which is owned by Carl Crawford, who is a former Major League Baseball player who
Evelyn Lozada's baby daddy.
Evelyn Lozada's baby daddy as well, who got a massive contract. His last contract was huge. He walked away with like 60-70 M clean, and, you know, baseball is guaranteed bread, so he's, you know, financially
every
solvent.
Penny.
Every penny. So he's financially solvent, as they say. And decided to start this label with got James Prince involved as well. And they found Megan. They've been funding her, financing her. They got her a deal at 300 Entertainment, which was formerly owned by Lior Cohen, Kevin Lyles, and Todd Moskowitz. Kevin's still there. Lior and Todd have gone on to do other things. And Megan has, you know, become a pretty big entity in the rap world. Pretty big personality. People like her. She's a very good-looking girl. She's entertaining. And she decided to change management and go to Roc Nation. And since then, Carl Crawford did an interview on Billboard, which I'm sure we'll talk about. It said that he has very little to no contact with her anymore. And she's decided now that she wants to renegotiate her deal because she doesn't like the deal terms of the deal that she signed with Carl with 1501 Entertainment. It's become a huge controversy because she took it to social media,
mm-hmm.
as the youngins do, and has a lot of fans.
But she didn't just take it to social media. She took it to court already.
Yeah. It's more and more looking like it was okay, do your live today because we're filing for court tomorrow. It seems like it's all been planned.
But apparently before she did her live, Carl posted something with Jay Prince. And when he posted with Jay Prince that he was partnering up with Jay Prince, he said something about loyalty. And
yes, he did. I saw that post. Yeah.
So if you know Jay Prince's history, that's been seen as a threat, right?
Yeah.
So that's when she went on her live. And when they went to court, and then after that, they released this mugshot she had from when she was a kid. So she interpreted it as a smear campaign.
Yeah.
So when she went to court, she's already gone into court once to ask for an injunction because she had a release set for this week, Friday.
Yeah, they stopped
it. She was under the impression that they were going to do something to stop that, right? Or to threaten her or intimidate her. So she received a temporary order of restraint that prevents Carl 1501 or anybody affiliated from 1501 from disparaging Meg, doing anything to, prevent promotion of the release, prevent the release, threaten Meg, in any way interfere with the release, et cetera, to clear the road for her to be able to come out on Friday without shenanigans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Billboard interview, a Billboard piece came out about her temporary order of restraint and the larger lawsuit against 1501, which alleges that it's unconscionably unfair in terms of the percentage. They get 60%, she gets 40%. Producers' fees, writers' fees, all other recording costs get paid out of her 40%.
Mm-hmm.
They get a percentage of publishing. They get a percent. It's a 360 deal. They get 30% of touring, but they don't have.
But hold on a second. Now, I don't mean to cut you off, but
that's okay.
We have to make sure that we're saying. This is only their side of what their interpretation of that contract is.
Sorry.
No one has actually seen this particular deal.
This is what Megan's lawsuit says.
Yes, this is what the lawsuit is saying. And I can attest, just a quick bit, I can attest that having our company sued, that oftentimes they are exaggerated, massive claims in order to show a juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like it is not entirely accurate. I'm not saying that it's false.
Right.
I'm just saying that the job is for it to seem like that there's such a wide canyon.
Yeah. Like she got 15 grand.
That's all I wanted to say.
I just wanted to make that point.
So this is what her lawsuit says. Her lawsuit says literally the words it's an unconscionably unfair deal because of the percentage splits with the 360. That the percentage that they take off of touring or merchandising is unfair because they don't actually have the infrastructure, meaning 1501, to support a touring or merch business. So she's claiming fraud in that regard, and that given her streams and her sales, she's generated an estimated $7 million worth of income in streaming and sales revenue, of which she's only seeing $15,000. So this
$15,000, which was an advance.
No, I don't think she said it was the advance. I said her advance was $10,000.
$10,000, that's what she said.
Okay.
I don't think she's talking about that. Her lawsuit claims, and I haven't seen the full lawsuit, but what I read, the lawsuit claims that she has generated, based on the math that she's done, an estimated $7 million, just talking about sales, not touring, not any of that stuff, just talking about streams and sales, of which she's seen $15,000. Now, and she claims that she has not been given an accurate and transparent accounting from 1501. So she is seeking damages, but more so she's seeking a release from the contract. She's asking the judge to declare the contract void.
Okay.
So then Carl told his side of the story.
Yeah, Carl did an interview.
Yeah, he did it yesterday.
He was coming in at Jeffrey, which I think he should have never did. But go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, he's emotional, and I agree. He shouldn't have done that because that wasn't. I don't know if you want to try to place your case in public opinion, but some of the things he said is that he spent upwards of $2 million, over the course of breaking her and doing all kind of marketing things. And part of his 360 was, like you said, was recouping from 30% from show money that she would get. And she's getting upwards of 100 grand a show right now. And she hasn't paid him any money.
And, well, no, he said she hasn't paid him since she went to Roc Nation.
Since she went to Roc Nation, yeah. And she said he's, you know, so it's a bunch of money he claims that he's owed from his 360 deal. And also part of his 360 deal was her owning parts of her masters, which is definitely unheard of from coming from a production company. In the interview, he's very emotional, understandably. And he also kind of says, like, a lot of the deal, like, he didn't know about. It was this guy named T. Farris who kind of was handling stuff, and he was more like the money guy, and he didn't really know what was going on. My opinion is, if Carr has the paperwork, like he says, and I think he does, I believe he does, I think he wasn't, I think this case is moot. I think it's bullshit. Like, it's like, you know, Megan is definitely upset because she feels being over Roc Nation now, they probably explained some things to her and she feels that she deserves more, but she signed the deal. I remember Bun B told me this story a long time ago and it made perfect sense. So, you know, UGK and Jive Records, because I own Jive Records, but UGK and Jive Records always had bumped heads about business, mm-hmm. because they didn't like it was kind of a similar situation. When UGK got signed, it was signed to a small record label based out of Port Arthur, Texas, called Big Time Records, a guy named Russell Washington owned it. And so it was a similar thing where they were signed to Russell signed a deal with Jive, and then eventually over time, you know, Russell got bought out of the deal and UGK got signed to Jive directly. But in one of the times that they were going through drama with Jive, Bun told me that he had, Leor had reached out. I guess it was by the time they did Big Pimpin'. So Leo had reached out because they were hot. He was like, mm-hmm. What's going on with you guys' deal? And this is almost up. I'd love to work with you. And Pimp C had this thing where, like, he was doing kind of what Megan was doing. He would just shut down. I ain't giving you a job, no records. Fuck Jive Records. They ain't taking my records. Fuck them niggas. Right. So Bun said that was their stance. And Leo said to him, dude, what you really need to do is just work through your deal. And all the time, if you're sitting here doing nothing, you should be put. That's what Tupac did when he did.
Yeah.
Album after album. I'm getting out. I signed this shit with Suge. I kind of realized now, wasn't that kind of what I wanted to do?
Uh-huh.
But I'm just going to give him what I owe him. And then I'm going to move on.
Well, but she's releasing music. She's releasing music on Friday. She's not giving him no money.
What I'm saying is to try to renegotiate your deal before you've put out an album, an actual album, it's unprecedented. Now, I'm never going to say never, but that doesn't usually work because once you put out the album, more expenses are going to be occurring and more costs are going to be occurring, as we all know. So it's like, when am I renegotiating? Like, you haven't put an album out yet. I don't know what your album is going to cost and what my marketing portion is going to be or my independent promotion cost is going to be. So like her to do this now, it's not feasible. And also to me, I'm a keep it real, and maybe I'll get in, some niggas mad at me or whatever, but I don't give a shit. It feels like poaching from the Roc Nation side. It feels like Roc Nation was not like Drake said, they wasn't shooting in the gym. They wasn't there. They just got here a few months ago. Carl and T. Farris and James, they put a lot of work to get this girl to this point that Roc Nation would even be interested in having her as a client. Yeah. So for Roc Nation to be like, okay, now you got her here. Now let's figure out a way to take her from them. Right. That's poaching.
But here's what's interesting to me. So Carl himself says that whoever this T. Farris person is, he's basically like, T. Farris handled Megan for me. So apparently T. Farris put together the deal point.
I think T. Farris comes from the Rap-A-Lot camp.
T. Farris moved around with Megan, and Farris walked Megan into Roc Nation also.
Yeah.
And apparently, I don't know, again, Carl's interview was very murky, which is why I said he shouldn't have done it, because it left me with more questions than answers. But he made it sound as though T. Farris is still in Megan's orbit.
I think he is.
If that's the case, then is it poaching if the person that you put in charge of that artist and who put the work into that artist is also
still there?
Yes, it's absolutely still poaching. It's absolutely still poaching. And mostly because they have, so Roc Nation as a business model is a division of Live Nation.
Yes.
And Live Nation is in the business of concerts and merch.
Touring.
That is what they do. Touring is what they do. They literally own the buildings, right? So they have that arm. You now have a record division arm. You have a CAA-backed, you know, sports division, which is nothing to have her, you know, walk in there and have an agent. Like, they basically have this covered from base to base. There's no, you know, no pun intended, right?
Mm-hmm. So
there is a feasible way for them to legitimately have a hand in every pot of the Megan business.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular case, I think Carl, listen, he did do himself a disservice, and that's mostly because he's emotional right now, and I don't think that this has anything to do with the finances, right? Like you said, I don't think Carl is going to be missing any meals anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's not a great orator. He doesn't really convey his thoughts clearly,
mm-hmm.
and that's what made him look a little amateurish and kind of feeds into the idea that she may have been sold a bad bag of goods, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But to claim fraud and to say that they don't have the infrastructure, listen, it's one thing for it's very difficult for you to tell a business person to go out and incur debt, right? Like, usually one thing comes before the other, right? So to operate and give some level of infrastructure is getting the deal with a label like 300, right? Like, now you've got marketing people and record people and real promo people, mm-hmm. and those sorts of people to really write that train on the track.
Wait, I don't mean to cut you off, Sean, but I have new information about the contract language. So Carl has just, we started at the top of this segment saying that Megan was granted a restraining order that would keep 1501 from preventing in any way hindering her releasing music on Friday. Carl has filed an emergency motion to dissolve that restraining order and filed equal motions to CAA and Live Nation to also force that 1501 have to grant permission for anything that Megan's involved in. So now, in terms of the contract language, Complex got a copy of the original contract with 1501. So I'm reading this from Complex. Contrary to Crawford's claim in Billboard that Megan owns part of her masters, the contract says that 1501 hereby is the owner from inception of each master recording to the extent that artists may be found to be the owner or author of any master recording. Artists hereby irrevocably signs to company of all of artists' rights in such master recording. The label also takes half of her publishing, and the language is an undivided 50% interest to each composition, and puts itself in charge of administering the publishing. In addition, there's a clause where Megan can be fined if she's late to publicity sessions, recording sessions, or appearances. The label does get 30% of live performance money, and all expenses for the concerts come from Megan's share, and all tours must be approved by 1501, but the contract does also say that the company is not a licensed talent agent and is under no obligation to procure employment from Megan. The talent agent language, this is Complex, is likely to get around licensing qualifications for talent agents in Texas.
Yeah, first of all, I'm not an attorney.
Yeah.
Right. Let me put that caveat out there immediately.
But you are a financial advisor.
I know a little bit. I know a little bit about a little bit. Okay. And that's why I said to you last night, I said, this is going to be very interesting because in order for them to operate in that capacity, they have to be a licensed and bonded agency.
Right.
And if they're not doing that, that can be seen as fraud.
Mm.
Now, I will say that I think it is going to be very difficult for, and this is where I think this all lays, when we talked about who was the attorney that represented her, and how was that attorney acquired, and how was that attorney compensated? Because getting someone giving you an attorney versus paying the bill for that attorney is two entirely different things. Two entirely different things. So we need to know, was this a third party person, or was this a person that has done things and has acted with a level of incompetence that would you know, void a contract, right? Like, so now you really open the cans of worms, because now when she says, hey, Carl 1501, you guys got to open your books. I want to know what has come in and what has gone out, which is fair. And guess what Carl gets to do? Open your books.
Tell me.
So now you got to give me an accounting. And guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to get an intern that's going to go to social media, and they're going to tell me every time you went and did a performance at a skate rink. And a walkthrough and everything else, because this is all about building a case. It's all about, you know, what you can tangibly grab. You know what I'm saying? This is big business. This ain't like, this ain't peanuts. And let me also just say this too. And I'm going to say this and I'm in mind. but Carl, because he got bread and because he got muscle with Jay Prince, is the only reason this is a thing. There are 100 Carls that have got nothing but a fucking 03 Benz with 50,000 miles on it, and got they act snatched up and poached and taken.
He said that. He said that at the end of the interview. He said if it wasn't for Jay Prince, y'all would have never heard from me.
Not at all. Not in the slightest. So what happens is these companies, and I'm not saying Roc Nation in particular, but companies of that size and companies of that magnitude can threaten you with the level of litigation that a small company and a sole proprietor cannot handle. You cannot eat that. Especially if you don't have any sort of insurance plan or contingency plan. These cases run 6 to 7 figures easy.
Yep.
In the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the resources, which many of them don't, what they end up doing is they acquiesce, they sign over the rights.
They settle. Yeah.
They settle out of court. They take a $10,000 check. They take a $20,000 check and they, you know, buy a juice bar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Buy a barbershop and keep it pushing.
Didn't we just see this happen with Cardi though? But it just wasn't quite as messy.
No, it definitely happened with Cardi, and it was as messy, but the shaft just didn't do what Carl did. Shaft just went underground. It's still litigating to this day. Shaft just never has done any public interviews, any public
appearances. And I think that,
to talk about, and that was smart on his part.
And I think that this is a lesson. There's a couple lessons to be taken from here. One in particular is that.
Is it one of the lessons that everybody on Twitter has said? Because you know, everybody on Twitter experts on music contracts.
Well, everybody, you know, LLC Twitter and all of them.
Yeah.
Listen, Passport Twitter.
And listen, man, 360s are not always the devil, okay? Mm-hmm. Every contract should be looked at and viewed on its basis of where you are and where you can realistically anticipate being.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
The reason that Meg feels that those terms are not applicable now is because of where she is right now. Because
she's making this down now.
Yes. And if you have the opportunity to get out of a contract, the game is the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You try to get out of it.
Yeah.
That ain't, people do, yo, niggas break contracts every day, B. They do. And if they have the opportunity to get out of it, they do. But to pretend as though you've given that particular business, you've given that particular company a chance to actually write and fulfill those things. I mean, guys, we're talking about less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're talking about less than 2 years here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I know a little bit about the touring business, and you can tour to some degree, but when you start doing, I mean, really making money,
really touring,
like you at minimum have to have an hour show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, ain't nobody coming to the Garden to see you perform for 20 minutes.
Nobody's coming to see you. You're not getting, you're going to get this $5,000, $7,000 in this duffel bag.
And be out.
And you're going to perform. you know, down at the Elks Lodge.
Word.
And that's gonna be that
at the Kit Kat Club.
And
I feel like Megan's being. I feel like Megan. And I don't think she's a dumb person by any stretch. But I'm just kind of watching this from the outside looking in, and I feel like she's really just a huge pawn, and doesn't quite. I don't know if she quite understands what's being done here. I feel like she's just like, I went to Roc Nation, I met Jay-Z, you obviously there's a connection with Beyonce based in Houston, so it's like, oh my God, I met B, we be texting, that's my girl, oh, should I be going to the house?
I think if anybody told you that the terms of your deal
were
terrible and we can make it better, I think that people listen to that. I think that that rings ears. And listen, do I think that based on what you read from the Complex excerpt, do I think this is a little draconian? Sure. Do I think that this is something that doesn't happen to other artists? Like, I don't think that there's anything unique.
No,
uniquely draconian in that contract that you will not find in most other new artists' contract.
That's what I was just about to say. Like we can go down the line. We can go right down the line. And again, I don't know the ins and outs of how these artists I'm about to mention worked out to get to where they are now. But when Future was first signed, he was signed through Rocco.
Mm-hmm.
Rocco and that was a little. He was signed through Rocco through a production.
Yeah, Rocco went
Future actually was wild because he actually signed a couple of production deals. It was some dudes in St. Louis that had
which is not uncommon
again.
Which
was
is not uncommon.
He has some guys. St. Louis has a paperwork on him. Rocco has some paperwork on him, and you know, Rocco ended up having to sue him in the last 2-3 years.
Yeah,
to get a lot of money. So
album that went all to Rocco, 2 or 3.
Exactly, because I would bet good money that a lot of the terms in Rocco's deal were very similar to this Megan deal. Drake, when he was signed through Young Money, but he was also signed through Corte. He's also signed through Jazz Prince, who's James Prince's son. And you know, I don't know the terms of those deals, but I would bet that they're not much different than this. And he just kind of worked out of them over time and got to the space now where he's running his own ship. There's several, you know, instances of, you know, of this where guys were kind of signed to guys or whatever, and they had to work out of it again. But I just feel like, you know, we'll see how it turns out. But to do all this now without putting an album out first and really seeing where you are in the marketplace for real, I just think it's dangerous. Because what if her album comes out and she catches an L? Now you're deeper in the red, and for what? I don't know. I just think that she's doing all this.
So y'all think she's stuck? You think she's gonna have to stay in the situation that she's in?
I don't think Carl. I don't know what the situation will be, but I'm promising you, Carl and James are going to participate hugely in probably her first 2-3 albums.
I don't think there's going to be a way around it.
And
I think that in a case like this, again, it becomes very difficult because if they can show that she had proper representation, it is going to be very difficult to say that this contract is voidable.
Or you signed it under duress or anything
like that. Apparently, he had given her, he had gotten an advance
from 300,
he, you know, gave her some money. And
yeah, he got a 200 grand advance, and he gave her 50 of that.
Yeah.
According to him.
Again, all of this is according to them. And here's what's going to be fun for when the lawyers got to do discovery, okay?
Because
guess what's going to happen, okay? Emails are definitely going to be handed over.
Text.
Let me get passwords.
I was going to say, Carl better hope that his business, the business period, is in order.
It's on the up and up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that Carl... and
to me, whose business might necessarily be in order. Not to me. You know what I mean?
I don't think Carl... And
homeboy entertainment going on.
And this isn't a slight at Carl, but this is a very common thing for people who are going into a business that they're not really... competent in. I think it's fair to say that he's not savvy in this space, and so I think it's a little, I would not judge him on not being able to rattle off exactly what is in that contract, But what I think he did was, I think he had something he wanted to invest in this young lady. He saw that there was a big opportunity here. He took on the cost. And as we know, people on our end, particularly on the management end, we know what it costs to get an act up and running. And we know what it costs for all of the man hours when there's no money there.
For me, it's not even about him not being able to clearly rattle off the deal points of the contract. He contradicted himself several times.
I think that, and I don't think that, and what I'm saying is that, and I'm in no way like going hard on the defensive Carr, but I'm just saying, I don't think Carr is, again, a great orator, and I don't think he's the most articulate, and I think that it would probably be very easy for him to get to misconstrue points or have them mixed up or this kind of all be jumbled up. Because I don't think that this is a space that we would be throwing him in right now. If we told Carr, what do you do when it's two outs in the third and you got a man on second? Okay, Carr's going to rattle that shit off because that's his space. Yeah. If you told Carr to rattle off what a baseball contract means and what comes with that, I'm pretty sure he would rattle that off. And I think that this is also a lesson for young artists to understand when you are signing these deals, not just that, you know, you're signing your life away and that sort of shit, but like, who are you actually getting into business with? And are they of the cloth of the people you want to be in business with?
And how many people touch your money before you see it? That's the thing about production deals. And, you know, that's like Reagan was saying a little while ago, all of a sudden everybody on Twitter is a goddamn music attorney. And it's like, with all the unsung and behind the music, how you gonna still sign a bad contract? And it's like, dude, I've been in the music business for 20 plus years. I can't read a music contract by myself.
Right.
Literally cannot. It's the language can be very confusing, and there's scales and graduation.
It's purposely that way. It's purposely confusing.
Yes.
It's not just straight numbers. It's graduated scale.
Yeah. And so
the percentage of the segment of the what, you know what I mean?
Like, when people were saying, hey, you know, she should read this or any of that sort of stuff. What would normally happen in a case like this, when you have a contract, particularly of this size and of this magnitude, is that your lawyer gives you abstracts. And that's basically like the bullet points.
The bullet points, exactly.
What are going to be the impactful scenarios in this, right?
These are the deal points. Every little thing.
They're not reading every, and like, you know, I'm just sitting back quiet because I don't know shit about, you know, music. But theatrically, I mean, my lawyers have never sat down and gone through every single word of every contract I've ever signed.
Like, explain your residuals for year two versus year
Right. You're trusting that they're telling you the truth.
Yeah, and that's what you need to know.
But I'm glad you said that, because that's a very important thing, because that is why there is a fiduciary responsibility when you have attorneys and you have, you know, legitimate financial advisors and people are handling your money. There is a level of responsibility, right? Like, that's literally the basis of a lawyer arrangement.
Yeah.
Is that you're putting your trust in this person, right? So there has to be some level of integrity. And so that person is then supposed to do everything they can for you to sort of understand what it is you're signing, and that you're clear, and that you're like, and here's my theory. Can you explain it to a 7-year-old?
Yeah.
If a second grader came to you and asked you, can you explain it to him? Okay, nigga, because that's the level that I need you to be able to explain it.
Exactly.
For real, though.
Like Denzel said in Philadelphia.
Like Denzel in Philadelphia.
Break it down to me like I'm a 3-year-old. Like,
yes. And that is incredibly important, because it gives you some perspective. And that probably didn't happen. I also know that when you're 21 and
you want to sign it, no matter what it says.
I think the bottom line with Carr here is he's getting a hard lesson, because Carr apparently was very close to Megan's mom, who passed away like a year or so ago. They're very close, had a good relationship. And Carl, I believe, as a lot of times happens in situations, looked at Megan as like family.
A sister, yeah.
Like a little sister. Like, yo, and your mom's will come to the house, you come to the house, what you need, I got you on that. Yo, here, just take this little money, go shopping, all type of thing. And so when, for her, that's what's really hurting him. He's like, yo, like, you was family, we from H-Town, yeah, like, you know what this is. Like, so for you to go to these Roc Nation people and have, in his mind, he's like, if you went to the Roc Nation people and you had them turn your mind on me.
But it's still a predatory contract. Like, but that contract, I understand that Megan was a brand new artist out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Buzz, but I find it hard to believe that any attorney worth his salt did any negotiating on her behalf with those terms.
I don't know. Most production deals are predatory contracts. You know what I'm saying? Because so some guy, some D-boy or some, you know, athlete or somebody just fell into some bread.
It's putting up some money, bread
to break this artist, and they're trying to protect their investment as many ways as possible, because if this shit doesn't pop off, I'm out of money, and I'm just out of the money.
And so here's the thing, and Carl, and some of those terms you read, if I had to bet what's in my pocket, Carl would have no clue on. He would not have been the person to talk about.
Put that stuff in there. The 360 deals.
Masters and his percentages and all of that. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
I absolutely believe that he entrusted a partner to go in and come up with the deal. They had an attorney draw it up. The attorney is who he's putting his trust in. This person who he's paying, I'm sure, is who he's putting his trust in. And he's not getting... He's getting the lion's share on this deal. So I think it was probably a little inconsequential to him to some degree to sit down and go line by line. Yeah. And what I think he understands now is that in business, you have to anticipate things. And while those little clauses, yo, nigga, the source lost their magazine on some vague ass paragraph on like fucking page 100 of a contract. Like, it was the weirdest shit. People do this all the time. People buy homes and don't realize they got balloon payments after 10 years.
Exactly. Like, why am I?
You got to pay that
for $2,000 to $9,000.
Yeah, my mortgage is $10,000 a month now. And all sorts of weird shit, because they had no one really sat down and kind of gave them a level of explanation that gave them some level of clarity. And I think that she's getting that now. And what I would have liked to happen is I would have liked to see Roc Nation try to broker this in a way that didn't involve attorneys. I think that, you know, sort of sicking the dogs on them as
Carl said. He said Carl basically got a call saying, yo, we're about to change this shit up, take it or leave it.
And so I think that with all of the let's continue black wealth and let's keep black excellence and all of that stuff, I feel like he might have been beneficial and probably willing to acquiesce to some of these renegotiation terms and would have been probably a lot more easier, because his first interview, he sounded really excited. He sounded like, oh shit, like we get to go to meet.
Yeah, I get know, to go Jay meet Jay-Z.
And Rock and all of these things are really happening now. And here's another lesson, son. When they tell you you don't need to be at that meeting, oh yes, fuck you.
Yeah, you get on, the next
nigga, your clients there. You better be there.
Yeah. So, you know, we're probably going to follow up this next week, because I'm sure it's going to be a lot more developments. But this is just a very, I don't know. I just got a bad feeling about how this is going to turn out for Megan. But I hope I'm wrong. That's all I'm going to say.
I hope it works out for everyone in a fair and equitable way.
Yes.
So I don't want to see her not.
And I hope we get new music.
Yes. Boom. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's about to be another hot girl summer.
You want to keep the curve.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap it up on that note. Cousin,
Reagan,
thank you for coming.
Where they can find you.
Reagan Gomez on Twitter. That's where I be at.
and OTI video.
That's right. And a Ruben Studdard, sorry, 2004 video.
Oh, shit. Oh, damn.
20 years ago.
I mean, it's short to IMDb. My fault.
It's all
good.
It's all right.
But thank you for coming on. Really, really appreciate it. We always enjoy having you on.
Hopefully next time we can do it in a person.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Hopefully you can make it to New York without the corona.
I know, right?
So we'll see y'all next week.
Later. Peace. Y'all wash your hands.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.